I hope your day is going well today. And this is Pat. I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, April the 24th. On the front page, newest veterans group serves as a bridge to local support, by Edith Brady Lunny from the Clinton Journal. On Tuesday evenings, when most people are sitting down for dinner, Zach Gilmore is setting up an area inside his family's bakery for veterans who are looking for camaraderie, conversation, and support. Some nights the conversations are deeply personal. In February 2025, Gilman took the initial steps to organize a branch of Project Headspace and Timing, known as FAT, P-H-A-T, in Clinton. The origins of the Mantino-based group is close to Gilman's heart. My buddy and I deployed in 2008 started FAT in 2017, said Gilmore. According to FAT's website, Eric Peterson founded the organization after his fellow teammate, who was working to establish FAT, took his own life following multiple tours overseas. The group is named after the Headspace and Timing Gauge, a gunsmithing tool that consists of two small pieces of metal connected by a chain, used to ensure that weapons like the M2 50 caliber machine gun are in working order. The name itself reflects what every veteran needs, the mental clarity, headspace, and the right moment, timing, to take the next step forward, a FAT statement explains. Informational material located on a table at Gilmore's Sweet Treats on the west side of Clinton's downtown square explain FAT's goal. Veterans from all walks of life are welcome to attend and share, or not, whatever may be weighing on them, or just connect with other veterans in the area. Gilmore's military experience includes a 6-year stint in the U.S. Army National Guard. His work to establish the second FAT group in Illinois included specialized training for helping veterans. In general, we want to offer a place for vets to come and make that bond. Some vets miss that brotherhood, said Gilmore, explaining the gatherings are not counseling sessions. Counseling is about the furthest things from our mind. A lot of the times it's just BSing and talking about how our days went. The number of vets who attend the meetings on a regular basis has been small so far, but Gilmore acknowledged the challenge of building attendance. I knew it would be a slow start. I think it takes time for the community to understand what we're doing. Two vets with an active U.S. Army background recently walked into a meeting and joined the conversation. Again, they were looking for that brotherhood, Gilmore said of the newest participants. For some veterans, the path to assistance is long and complicated, said John Renkin, a U.S. Army veteran who served two tours in Iraq and attends FAT meetings. As far as veterans reaching out for help, it sometimes takes them reaching a breaking point. Something bad has to happen before they will ask for help, said Rankin. Younger men and women whose military experiences may vary widely from older service members can be tougher to recruit to support organizations, as veterans agreed. There are times when the work of extending a helping hand to a veteran happens spontaneously, outside the confines of a meeting. In January, a veteran who was struggling with his mental health reached out to a woman as he stood in the parking lot of Warner Hospital and Health Services. His situation took a positive turn when the woman who was familiar with FAT contacted Gilmore and a member of another veterans organization. Both responded. He told me he wanted to get his medication straightened out. So we took a ride to Danville VA Hospital that day, said Gilmore. Clinton Police Chief Ben Lowers credited Gilmore with helping another veteran recently who was experiencing mental health issues after the loss of two friends to suicide. I reached out to Zach and connected the two of them together. They met for coffee and talked one-on-one. Zach is a great resource, said Lowers. Military men and women often accept help more readily from other veterans. If you can put someone like Zach in front of a veteran, someone who's walked in their shoes, it can make a real difference, said the police chief. Jesse Owens with the AmVets Post 14 was part of the coordinated effort to get the veteran outside of the hospital to the help he needed. Owens and members of Clinton's two other national support groups, American Legion Post 103 and VFW Post 4168, are regulars at the table for FAT sessions. Owens and Marcus Rogers, both Vietnam veterans, noted the recruiting challenges faced by the organization, the number of active members who come to meetings and help with projects like the annual Thanksgiving dinner that provides 300 meals at veterans and with a holiday meal delivered to their homes is low, the men agreed. All the veterans organizations help each other, said Owens. One of the most important duties performed by the combined group is the work of the Military Color Guard. The specialized team participates in military ceremonies, funerals, and community events. Rogers recalled a FAT meeting where a veteran who had previously shared few comments just opened up and started talking. The safe space in an open forum puts veterans at ease, he said. The camaraderie is something we all mention. Here we are planning summer events. We're just talking, said Rogers. Like its counterpart in northern Illinois, the local FAT also brings volunteers together for outdoor events where conversations lead to connections and those connections create pathways of support. Fishing trips and other outdoor gatherings are on the horizon for FAT, said the Clinton leader. Edith Brady Looney is a sometimes retired journalist who lives in Clinton. And also from the front page, the city EMA agreement set for renewal, Gordon Woods reporting. William Pavlik, director of DeWitt County EMA, Emergency Management Agency, visited the city council on Tuesday. Pavlik talked briefly about the upcoming renewal of the city's agreement with the county for EMA services. I'm here on behalf of the EMA and for renewal of our agreement for EMA services with the City of Clinton for this year starting May the 1st, 2026 through April the 30th, 2027, Pavlik said. The city's share of payment for those services will be $15,000, as it has been for several years. Pavlik said he hoped for negotiations that might increase that amount for the following year. Commissioner Dan Bellinger said Pavlik works frequently with Clinton Fire Department, including the recent cleanup of an oil spill from a houseboat on Clinton Lake. Ballinger said Pavlik often responds to car accidents, among other emergencies. Pavlik said he recently completed the countywide emergency plan. And also, we obviously do a lot with the power plant, Pavlik said. We exercise every 2 years with the plant, and we also do additional training exercises with the fire departments, EMS, public health, all local stakeholders to try to build a whole community approach. And in other city news, brush pickup. Commissioner Ken Buchanan reminded residents brush intended for city pickup should be out by 7 a.m. on Monday. We have different zones we go to, but that doesn't mean we're going to make it to every spot the first day, Buchanan said. Once we get through a section, we won't come through again for another month. Buchanan also asked residents to clean up grass they blow into the streets when mowing. He said grass left in the streets ends up clogging the city's sewer system. And hydrant flushing. Commissioner John Wise told residents not to worry if they see an open hydrant running unattended. He said hydrants in some locations need to run longer in order to get them completely cleaned out. Wise also said shutting a flushing main off too soon can cause water main breaks. The Kiwanis Park cleanup. Commissioner Dan Ballinger reported the recent volunteer cleanup of Kiwanis Park went well. A second cleanup day for the park is scheduled for 9 a.m. on May the 2nd. Anyone interested in volunteering should show up at that time. Ballinger said the second cleanup would involve mostly cleaning up trash. Additional business? The council also approved the following. An ordinance for the sale of 806 North Side Square to Surjit Singh for $17,000. To Census Analytics Reintegration by BS&A for $8,600. Worked on the fiscal year 2027 budget. A three-year engagement letter from Lauterbach and Amen. An ordinance amending Chapter 8 of Title 7, Water Rates, and Chapter 9 of Title 7, Sewer Rates. Demolition bids for East Main Street from Steve's Trucking for $132,940. A solid waste contract with GFL. A solid waste contract with J&S. A solid waste contract with Republic Service. And then items on file for the next council meeting. The EMA agreement. Maintenance engineering agreement. MFT maintenance resolution, MFT estimates of maintenance cost for $84,555.80, request for expenditure authorization of MFT funds, ordinance providing for and approving an amendment to the Clinton TIF District 1 redevelopment plan and projects. Combined liquor license for package and gaming. Zoning ordinance amendment for C3 district to allow self-storage units as special use. And finishing off on the front page, new survey finds most U.S. farmers can't afford fertilizer. Tammy Sloop from Farm Week reporting. A nationwide survey conducted by American Farm Bureau Federation shows 70% of respondents cannot afford to purchase enough fertilizer to get them through the year. More than 5,700 farmers from every state and Puerto Rico responded to the survey, which was conducted April 3rd through the 11th. In Illinois, more than 250 farmers responded. The analysis reveals almost 8 in 10 farmers in the southern U.S. say they can't afford all needed supplies this year, followed by the Northeast and the West at 69% and 66% respectively, compared to 48% of the farmers in the Midwest. Just 19% of farmers in the South pre-booked fertilizer purchases in advance of planting season. In the Northeast, only 30% of farmers pre-booked, followed by 31% in the West and 67% in the Midwest. Even with higher pre-booking rates, almost 1 in 3 Midwestern farmers still report entering the season without securing all their fertilizer needs. The results provide an eye-opening look at the realities farmers are facing today. AFBF President Zippy Duval said during a media call April the 14th. We've been hearing a lot of speculation in Washington, D.C., and beyond about the percentage of farmers that have pre-ordered their fertilizers. I think that you'll be surprised at the degree in which it varies between regions. Duval, AFBF staff and members called the economic situation of farm country bleak as farmers have dealt with several years of high input costs and low commodity prices. The conflict in Iran, as well as the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, has intensified input challenges as farmers face fertilizer and diesel price spikes. According to the survey, 94% of respondents reported their financial situation has worsened or remained the same since last year, while only 6% reported improvement. Survey results also suggest many farmers are already adjusting fertilizer purchases and application decisions in response to rising costs. If disruptions persist, these adjustments could affect yields, acreage decisions, and overall production potential in the 2026 crop year, according to the AFBF Market Intel report. Spring planting decisions depend heavily on access to fertilizer and diesel fuel, both which have been impacted by geopolitical risks that have disrupted global markets, according to the Market Intel. Since the escalation of tensions in the Middle East, nitrogen fertilizer prices have risen more than 30%, while combined fuel and fertilizer costs have increased roughly 20 to 40%. Urea prices have increased by 47% since the end of February, marking the largest month-to-month percentage increase in the price of urea. During the media call, Duvall, as well as two members from North Carolina and Oklahoma, shared how they have pivoted on their farms because of input price challenges, noting fertilizer price spikes have forced them to spread less fertilizer, cut acreage, or transition to soybeans. Lorenda Overman and her husband grow corn, soybeans, sweet potatoes, as well as hay and strawberries, and raise hogs in their North Carolina farm. "She did not pre-book fertilizer because we could not make ends meet last year, frankly, and so we were hoping that prices would go down as planting season began. Then, with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, nitrogen prices went up $100 per ton in the first week," she said. "The family last year used turkey and chicken litter to supplement nitrogen, but they don't have that option this year. So we're going to cut back on our acreage of corn and try to plant a crop that needs a little less fertilizer, which would be soybeans. We are also going to spread that fertilizer a little bit thinner," she said, adding, "To compound the situation, her area is 8 inches behind on rainfall." Many of the farmers surveyed said they will forgo applying fertilizer this spring in hopes that prices will return to an affordable level later in the growing season. "Without the necessary fertilizers, we'll face lower yields, and some farmers will reduce acres altogether, which will impact food and feed supplies," said Duvall, who had a meeting at the White House last week to discuss the survey results and other matters. "It's too early to know how this will affect food availability and prices in the long run, but it's a warning light that we've shared with leaders in Washington. We look forward to working with them to find solutions so farmers can continue to feed families across America. Their input is critical as we continue to monitor volatility in fertilizer markets, driven in part by the current conflict in Iran," Nelson said. "Our leaders are actively engaging with Congress and the administration to pursue long-term solutions that help farmers navigate today's challenging agricultural community. IFB remains committed to supporting policies that ensure reliable access to essential inputs like fertilizer and fuel, while protecting the long-term viability of farm operations across Illinois." Duvall said AFBF will share the survey results with the White House and Congress. Duvall and staff also pointed to AFBF's previous recommendations to the White House to safeguard fertilizer supply chains and reduce the risk of market disruptions. The organization also has asked fertilizer companies to act responsibly by avoiding price gouging. The March 9th letter to President Donald Trump outlined a handful of recommended steps, including suspending countervailing duties on imported fertilizer products. AFBF also called for a waiver of the Jones Act, which the administration has suspended. The first opportunity to see how farmers reacted to fertilizer prices and availability will come with USDA's May World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report, followed by the June 30th acreage report. This survey was distributed through a cooperative project between Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois Press Association. For more food and farming news, visit farmweeknow.com. In local news, the Wagners celebrate a 50th wedding anniversary on May the 2nd. Merle Wagner and Jennifer Havlin Wagner will celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary on Saturday, May the 2nd, from 2 to 4 at Gather in Grace venue on the square in Clinton. The event will be hosted by their daughters, Julie Wagner Hendricks and Jill Wagner Smith. They were married on May the 2nd, 1976, at 2 p.m. at the First Christian Church in Clinton, with Candy Morrow and Jack Duff as attendants. The couple requests those attending to bring a card with a memory written inside. We also have one obituary this morning. Kenneth Leo Lynch of Clinton, 64, formerly of Lane, passed away at 1:31 a.m. on April the 17th at his residence in Clinton. A celebration of Kenny's life was held at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, April the 22nd, at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Private family burial will be conducted at Oak Park Cemetery, Clinton, at a later date. And from the op-ed page, Car Ride Conversations from the Mac Desk by Billy McMacken. Some of the best conversations you'll ever have don't happen at the table. They happen in the car. No eye contact, no pressure, just the road ahead, a little background noise, and time that kind of opens up. I had one of those moments recently. I had the chance to make a trip to the Crystal Lake for a baseball tournament. Just me, Camden, the player, and Kendall, the dog sitter. It doesn't always work out that way, where you get that kind of one-on-one, or in this case, one-on-two time. But this one did. And the ride home, it was just perfect. Camden and I talked through some game details. Nothing heavy, just working through a few moments, a few plays, the kind of stuff players and dads naturally circle back to. No pressure, no lecture, just conversations. In the back seat, Kendall had her own story to tell. She was on her feet the entire night watching Max, and let's just say it didn't all go according to plan. She walked us through it play by play. Some frustration, some humor, a little bit of everything that comes with a responsibility at that age. And what stood out most wasn't just what they said. It was how natural it all felt. They talked. They listened. They jumped in and out of each other's stories. One minute it was baseball, the next it was dogs, then school, then something completely random. No structure, no agenda. Just a conversation that kept going. And I found myself mostly just listening. That's the beauty of those car rides. You don't have to force anything. You don't have to sit them down and ask big questions. You just give it space, and eventually the conversation finds you. I've learned over the years that kids will talk, just not always when or how you expect them to. Across the dinner table? Maybe not. Sitting on the couch? Sometimes. But in the car, with the miles rolling by, and no pressure to make eye contact. That's where it happens. Those rides after games are especially important. They don't need a full breakdown before you even leave the parking lot. They already know how they played. They know what went right and what didn't. What they need is space, or maybe just a simple, "I love watching you play." Because those rides can go on one of two ways. They can build confidence or slowly chip away at it. The best move, let them lead. And when they do start talking, be ready. Not to coach every word, not to correct every detail, just to listen. Because those moments don't last forever. Schedules get busier. Kids get older. The car rides get quieter or disappear altogether. But for now, they're still there, and they matter. Years from now, they won't remember every score or every stat line. But they might remember that ride home from Crystal Lake. The conversation, the laughs, the stories about a baseball game and a dog that wouldn't cooperate. Just a stretch of road and a moment that turned into something more. Sometimes the best conversation in life happen when you're not even looking at each other. Just driving. Billy McMacken is the owner of the Normalite newspaper group. And now, from the Prairie Duck column, Medications for Treating Substance Use Disorders by Kelly Evans Hollinger, M.D. Substance use disorders like alcohol and opiate use disorders can be diverse, and every patient has a different story when it comes to their addiction. Social factors, genetics, history of trauma, or mental health disorders, and many other contributors may be at play, which can make treatment of substance use disorders challenging. Because of these challenges, successful treatment of substance use disorders often requires multi-approach. Just like a patient with diabetes is best treated with diet, exercise, education, and medication, a patient with a substance use disorder is most effectively treated with a multidisciplinary plan. For many patients, medication can be an important piece of the approach. I have had several recent experiences with patients successfully abstaining from alcohol and opiates with the help of medication. The most common example that I see is alcohol use disorder, which can range from alcohol dependence to binge drinking behavior, which causes disruption in a person's social and family life and often leads to other medical problems. One evidence-based option that I often use for patients with alcohol use disorder is an oral medication called naltrexone. That's spelled N-A-L-T-R-E-X-O-N-E. Recently, a patient who previously struggled with binge drinking described the effect of this medication to me, which was an enlightening explanation. "Doc, I've always been someone who, if I had one beer, I was going to have 6 or 12 more. But on this med, I can have 1 or 2 beers with my friends, and I just don't feel like having any more." As a quite safe and accessible medication, naltrexone is an option I discuss frequently in my primary care clinic. Another common and sometimes devastating problem is opioid use disorder. We have very good evidence that medication can significantly improve the probability of a patient being able to stay off opioids, and those options are gradually becoming easier to access as well. One of my patients who for many years struggled with opioid use disorder, even as it wreaked havoc on their life from medical and legal perspective, has done extremely well with medication-assisted therapy. They describe the effect of medication as, "The first time I can remember that I have gone days without thinking about finding opioids." The current area of research is around GLP-1, commonly used in diabetes and obesity, as potential treatment for substance abuse disorders. While the verdict is still out on these, we may soon have some data on whether they hold up as effective treatment options for this group of patients as well. While social support, therapy, and counseling and other facets of treatment will always be important, medications to help patients with some forms of substance abuse are an essential piece of the puzzle. I have witnessed many of my own patients who have hugely benefited from those treatments. I am hopeful that the medications will become easier for patients to access and have more options. I will leave you for today. Looking forward to be back with you next week. Enjoy whatever remains of your day. Get out and enjoy some sunshine.